automobile industry at the beginning of the 20th century, or cell phones in the 1990s, if you're one of the first companies to come in, just think about Microsoft or Google or Apple, if you're one of the first companies to come in, you have a huge advantage. So we're in that window now for clean energy industries. And I've been trying to convince provincial and federal officials that now is the time for Canada to invest in these new industries that are going to come. The Canadians, there has been a lot of discussion about hydrogen, about fuel cells, because we've had a long history of investing in that industry here. But I think that there are reasons to doubt that hydrogen will be a solution in any near-term future. The more immediate things that we need to focus on are in transforming our transportation system, which would be potentially electric vehicles. But what is often ignored is the fact that if we expanded mass transportation, we have a ready solution here. So if we go to an average European city, for example, London or Madrid or Paris, housing costs are not as much a problem because they have very extensive train networks. But in North America, we rely so much on private vehicles, we haven't thought enough about mass transportation solutions. Think about if we had a high-speed train line that went out to Abbotsford or farther out. This would provide ready access for thousands of people to get to cheaper housing and would alleviate a lot of our inflationary pressures. The main industry right now that is fundamental to the future of electrification of the transportation system and also for electric generation is batteries. And that is an area where Canada would have a comparative advantage because of all our minerals, because of our knowledge base in science and technology. But what we don't have in place are the policies to promote a battery industry in this country.
That speaks lots so to the international conflicts at the moment, right? Because we see this window of opportunity that we could be investing and developing the Canadian industry, but we are also seeing now a big war, commercial war in between all countries. When we were talking about the U.S. tariffs on aluminium, all the regulatory measures that have been placed by Canada and by India and by Brazil, how would you say that these measures impact the availability and the cost of renewable energy technologies in Canada and for future development?
It could have a big impact. We know, for example, with electric vehicles, that Chinese vehicles, including their leading manufacturer, BYD, are considerably cheaper, supposedly up to $10,000 cheaper than Teslas and have a longer range. So by putting tariffs on these electric vehicles from China, we are shortchanging consumers and the ability for us to transform our electric vehicles. We also know, for example, that battery technology needs a lot more investments to get off the ground. If we can improve battery technology or if we can reduce its costs, then Canada has a huge advantage in terms of renewable energy resources, whether we're talking about geothermal in the Rocky Mountains or in British Columbia, or we're talking about offshore wind in the Georgia Strait right off of BC, or in some cases even solar in the prairies in Ontario. We also have abundant hydroelectric energy in Quebec and Manitoba. And so what it shows again is a lack of federal leadership and a lack of provincial leadership. Why would Ontario be investing in much more expensive nuclear waste that will last 10,000 years when Quebec and Manitoba would love to export hydroelectricity to them? And the same for BC and Alberta. Why is Alberta stuck in fossil fuels when BC has abundant renewable energy resources? This shows a huge policy vacuum.
So if we're talking, I was trying to focus on the international sector, but I think that when you go to the provincial, I think that's the current war between countries and the commercial level, then of course opens exactly this that we were saying, a window for us to communicate interprovincial and with another provinces to actually renew our policies and look at those investments, right?
Exactly. It's the international conflict that actually expands that window of opportunity for us so that for the first time in a long time, people are actually talking about made in Canada and how to reduce interprovincial barriers. Now, where Trump is right is that the Chinese have been dumping and subsidizing their industries for a long time. So they were a marginal player in batteries. They now control over 90% of the battery market. They control the largest part of the wind and solar markets because the government has lined up behind their industries and subsidized them. And we in the West have been caught asleep because we have too many Western companies that were promised that they were going to make lots of money in the Chinese market. So they transferred their technology, they let the Chinese steal it. And now we're really behind in terms of competitiveness in these clean energy industries. But it's not too late. It's not too late. If we had an industrial policy that was proactive to promote Canadian technology, we could catch up.
That's perfect. And I think that's just enjoying what you've just mentioned before I move on to a more general question about sustainability and the policies surrounding it. Just because you've mentioned quickly before Canadian investment in a TMX pipeline, if I catch it right, and also you've mentioned the BC's general policy on fossil fuels. Do you see how these trade tensions with the US affect the TMX? And if the expansion that was made actually make us now more dependent on fossil fuel exports, because we depend on the oil coming back from the U.S. after being transformed?
Well, right now Trump hasn't put any tariffs on oil exports, so that dependency on the U.S. market will continue. However, you're right, it is also offering additional support for TMX, because the idea is we're going to diversify our exports of oil, and the same argument was given for subsidizing the LNG industry by the BC government. And these are, in my mind, very foolish kinds of arguments, because these are sunset industries that should be closed down and shut down so that we can save the environment for our children and have a livable planet. We know that the costs of climate change are going to be far larger than any kinds of revenues that these oil exports provide us. But instead of transitioning to the future, we want to make short-term profits.
Okay. And just maybe transitioning a little bit to agreement so that then we can wrap up talking about general policies and how to change those. When we're talking about Trump, we also know that he recently withdrew from the Paris Agreement, and he has a policy, as you mentioned, of investing heavily in fracking. It's general U.S. policy, but it's something that he is directly related to. So if we're looking at Canada electing a conservative government and a similar shift in here, do you see any policies that would be at more risk of rolling back right now that we need to focus on?
I'm not sure if I understand the question.
Yes, okay. So we have now Trump being elected and a possible change for a conservative government. So if we're looking at those and all the policies that will be changed, is there something that we need to worry the most alongside fracking that could be coming in the way?
Yeah, well, I think the main danger, whether it's a conservative or liberal government, is that these tariff wars continue. And we know that our auto industry has been making, you know, we're a unified North American auto industry. They say that an auto part, you know, crosses the Canadian-U.S. border an average of 12 times before an automobile is fully assembled. And what Trump is trying to do is basically disassociate the U.S. industry from the Canadian auto industry. And so our ability to enter into the EV market is dependent upon this integration with the U.S. And so if Trump continues with his tariff wars, what's going to happen is devastation for Canadian manufacturing sector. It will be devastation for our steel exports, for our aluminum exports, and for our automobile industry. And so that will have a huge impact on our ability to enter into the EV industry in the future.
And you think there's a possibility of us withdrawing from the Paris Agreement here as well?
Effectively, it might happen anyway. Right now, our projections are that neither BC nor Canada is on track to meet its commitments. So we may not have said it out loud, but we have effectively withdrawn by our lack of action. You know, Trudeau had a very positive momentum coming out of the Paris Agreement. He tried to create this pan-Canadian framework for climate change, and yet the provinces created such obstacles that reveal the weakness of the federal government. There really is not a willingness within Canada to accept a pan-Canadian framework at this point, and the federal government is unwilling to provide enough subsidies like Biden did for the provinces to start to invest in clean energy. So we have been kind of stuck. Our emissions have kind of plateaued for a long time. And once this LNG industry starts to take off in BC, our whole carbon plan is busted.
Okay. And I think that's it's so hard to think about it. It honestly gives me a little bit of fear of what is the how is the my future and our generation's future shaping like? So I think that's what I'm trying to do here, remarking my feelings, is to talk about governments and changes in governments. So what exactly should we be looking at when it comes to general population on how to directly help or push governments into more action in terms of sustainable energy, clean energy, and all other environmental friendly investments that should be made?
I know it feels helpless as a voter or an ordinary citizen, but in fact there are a number of things that we can do. The most obvious one is to change our own individual behavior. That is, when your car dies, buy an electric vehicle. The second, and also reduce your footprint. Try to reuse metal cans or bottles instead of plastic, for example. Try to switch your heating to a heat pump, which is based on electricity and therefore based on hydro rather than natural gas. There are many things we can do as individuals. Perhaps the most important thing is to vote. Unfortunately, young people in general have much lower voting turnout rates. And that's why they're not paid attention to. We know that younger people have much stronger environmental values, but they don't vote in the same numbers. Imagine the world we'd be living in right now if Harris had won, but not enough young people turned out for Harris to win in the key swing states, and therefore we're stuck with Trump going back to a 19th century policy towards climate change. So voting is really important in being politically active. Tens of thousands of votes in those swing states in the U.S. would have made all the difference. The same way a few years ago we had a referendum here on proportional representation. Young people didn't turn out to vote. Older people did. They didn't want proportional representation because they tend to be against change. If we had proportional representation, we would have had a viable path for a Green Party here in Canada. And remember, Trudeau promised proportional representation when he was elected, and then he just dropped the whole ball. So young people could push for a change in our voting system. This is why Europe has much more progressive climate policies, because they have a PR system, a voting system, that allows for a Green Party to become a strong voice. And then the third element, of course, besides being active as an individual in terms of your choices, and in terms of voting, is to make yourself heard. That is, to make yourself knowledgeable and to join with other people. And I think that's why your broadcast is so important. When people feel alone, they feel helpless. But if they start to join together, things can change. We feel hopeless now, but remember, Trump is only in office for 4 years. Under Biden, we had the most sweeping and most dramatic climate change legislation historically. And so in 2 or 3 years from now, we need to be ready to vote in a new government and to change policies towards ones that we actually believe in.
And now, coming from a more political science analysis, just to wrap up this episode, is there one key recommendation that you would have for policymakers and for governments when we're talking about clean energy and when you're talking about the necessary changes so that we can secure a more stable climate?
I think the most disappointing thing to me is the fact that both the provincial and federal governments are now backing off on the carbon tax. The carbon tax was considered to be one of the most progressive legislative achievements of Canada. It was heralded around the world, and I don't think that voters understood that the money was coming back to them. There was no tax on voters in terms of them losing money out of their pockets. All of that money was coming right back to them. But because the provincial and federal governments didn't make this clear to voters, they have supported conservative candidates against their own interests. And so this is a huge mistake. and one that could be reversed still.
Perfect. I really, really appreciate all of your inputs here, Dr. Hira, and I hope you're having a pleasant week. Thank you.
It's my pleasure, and I'm happy to be with you.
Diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
Do you know what your local wetland has done for you lately? Wetlands function like nature's kidneys, mitigating the impacts of floods and droughts, protecting our communities, and supporting food production. Despite representing 6% of the Earth's surface, wetlands store 33% of the planet's carbon. If you value life, thank a wetland. Learn about wetlands at work with Ducks Unlimited Canada at ducks.ca/wetlands.
Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie is back for its 27th year. My name is Catherine Fisher, and I interviewed 8 Canadians for the Franco podcast. In this episode, I spoke with Alexandre Chartier, Executive Director of Société Historique de la Saskatchewan. Here's our conversation. So, Alexandre, you're the Executive Director of La Société Historique de la Saskatchewan. Can you tell me what the society does and your hopes for its future?
Yeah, so it's Société Historique de la Saskatchewan, the French Historical Society, to work on the Saskatchewan history and before the history of the province of Saskatchewan and Prairie. So we work to protect, to preserve, and to share Francophone history in the Prairie, French Canadian Prairies in Saskatchewan in the Western. We're beginning in Nouvelle-France, and so far in Nouvelle-France. So about the activities, we have, for the preservation, we have an archive center since 2019 with two archivists. So we develop like a regular services in archive, so acquisition to and from the donation. From families and organization, Francophone organization, and we work with the provincial archives about the public archives, so with a Francophone school or history, and we develop valorization, so like sharing and develop project activities to talk about history, Francophone history in Saskatchewan. So almost all activities in French, because the financing of French activities like the vitality of community. But when we have some asking or just question or just interest for English organization, we help for that. So we develop all that sharing. It's very, very vast. Like we can do exhibition. We work closely with all immersion and French Francophone school in Saskatchewan to develop resources, workshop, a lot of workshop each year. And we have a festival, a Heritage Days festival each year since almost 20 years. So it's a festival in French for kids. So elementary school, it's a proper elementary schools, and during the festival is in historic places in Saskatchewan, and we develop one thematic. So each year is a different thematic, like we can develop the history of Voyager, we can develop history of community culture, history of First Nation in French in Wanuskewin, for example, and Michikoto in Batoche. So the next for this year, in 2025, we return in Homestead Motherwell in the south of Saskatchewan to develop the pioneer period and colonization. So yeah, it's we have a lot of validation action activities. And actually, since 2 or 3 years, we have a boutique, and since 1 year, we have a bookstore. So it's a new exhibition. Yeah, we develop a bookstore in Saskatoon. It's a part it's a part of libertarian activities, liberal activities on a party, just because it's a like actually Nation Française Poise, it's a bookstore, French bookstore, is it's the only one Western and Northern Canada francophone bookstore. So board like to keep francophone services on a book and in the statute. So that's why we continue to work.
Is your bookstore available online? Like, is that something that somebody can like order a book if they're looking for something?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's online. At the beginning, we developed a boutique. It's not a bookstore. Bookstore is in just 1 year. And in 2021, during the pandemic situation, pandemic crisis, we need to change some financing project because of the restriction. So we're looking to develop marketing visual and marketing project just because we would like to reinforce the proud and the pride identity for the Francophone teenager in a rural community. So just to any sportswear or bunny hug or anything with a name of the community. And we insert the name, the date of foundation of each community. So we insert information about heritage, Francophone heritage, inside all the marketing project and products. So at the beginning, the boutique, and we transform into the bookstore in 2022, because the last bookstore in Saskatchewan and mostly in Saskatchewan, in Canada, closed in Gravelbourg, in the south of Provence. So that's why we developed that. So we have at the beginning in the website, e-commerce website, and right now we have the e-commerce and the boutique in Saskatoon in a local market place. Yeah.
Do you get a lot of questions from people looking for their ancestors, genealogy questions?
We receive a lot. I don't know if it's a lot or not, but we receive each year some question from our ancestor. A lot of people come from Quebec or France. Like each year, we have one family from France to come to see the family, the family in Saskatchewan or in Canada. So it just it come back with a big travel from France or Belgium. But yeah, we have some question. We don't have a lot of activities with genealogy. We are counseled to go on Saint Boniface or SGNO. It's a Genealogical Society of Northwest. It's a Francophone Historical Society too in Alberta. But the most both have a lot of resources and information of genealogy. Yeah, so it's a specific domain of the history of genealogy, because we need a lot of resources and specific resources about history, family, and village history, etc. Yeah.
So what brought you to Saskatchewan and what keeps you there?
So yeah, for me, I come from France in Auvergne, in volcano in the center, in the middle and center in France. Yeah, we have an old, very old volcano in France. So I come from Auvergne and Limousin. I come to develop a project in Manitoba at the beginning. So I would like to understand what the Francophone minority, what's mean minority in a language, because in France we don't have any this problem. And I don't understand, in the past, I don't understand how the language where the community had the minority, so like you speak or you don't speak. So at the past, it's my mind. So I go in Manitoba just for 6 months project in artistic, because I'm a musician at the beginning. I'm not an archivist. And after that, I don't want to, in the past, I don't want to come back in France, because I see a very, very good challenges in a Western community, in a Francophone Western community, very good challenges to help Francophone community, Francophone people to develop the proud and cultural activities. And after that, I go in Regina, Saskatchewan, to find a contract with a cultural center. une fois qu'on a le conseil culturel francophone. It's a like a cultural board or artistic arts board in Saskatchewan for the Francophone community. So I work in a project coordinator with that. But I come back. So we come back in France just 1 year, and I come back in Western Canada after that, in Regina. And after that, I work for the French Historical Society. At the beginning, I just need to find any jobs for it, okay? So I would do. And but I see a very good, hot challenges in the organization and history. Like I like your history. I beginning a history in my past in the university. I didn't finish my degree, but like history is the domain like I love that. But I didn't think to work when I was a student. But in Regina, when a lot of people said, "What you come back in Regina? What you come back in Saskatchewan?" Because Saskatchewan is Saskatchewan in Canada. So yeah, but it's very nice province. It's quiet, very quiet. It's no stressful. I live in Paris in the past, so I know what's a big city, and a lot of people here. So I know it's a lot of activities, a lot of services, etc. In Montreal, in Toronto, in Vancouver, but in Saskatchewan, we have full services like we need, but we have a quiet place. Very respectful, very, very friendly in Saskatchewan. People, English or not, is very friendly. And I know a lot of guys see the flat place. You see, Saskatchewan is flat, and Alberta or BC, we see the mountain, but we don't see the good things in Saskatchewan. In all of license plate is right, Saskatchewan, live in sky. So in Saskatchewan, we don't need to see the flat country. We need to see the biggest sky in Canada. Like the same thing in a mountain. We don't see the sky in a mountain. We need to see the mountain. So that's a very good place to live it. Yeah.
Does the society have any plans for the month of the Francophonie in March?
We have activities with a youth organization, the Festival for Francophonie, the Festival for Youth in Regina, on one day. So we present the trade fair, we present a dance, French Canadian dance, and a sash. Like we have, we create in 2017 a Francescois sash. It's a yellow sash, so like very unique. And this sash talk about the history, the pillar of the history of Francophone in Saskatchewan. So we have activity with that, and we have the bookstore in the festival. In March, we get a lot of workshop in school. Like I think all weeks the 12, and I think the 12 workshop in the school in March, so very good for that. And we support a lot of activities from the community, regional community, open regional community. Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you very much for making yourself available. I wanted to wish you a happy month of the Francophonie, and I'll be checking out your bookstore.
That was my conversation with Alexandre Chartier, Executive Director of Société Historique de la Saskatchewan. This has been the RVF Franco Podcast 2025. Thanks for tuning in.
Rendez-vous de la Francophonie is now on until March 31st. Enjoy contests, performances, free film screenings, and local activities to cultivate your Francophone roots. Join in the fun and visit rvf.ca today.
Communication is everywhere, but what is it? Communication is how you share your thoughts, your opinions, your culture, from what you see on TV to what you post online. But what about the people who are not being seen or heard? AMI is a media company that strives to be a voice for Canadians with disabilities, whether it's through positive portrayal, reflection, and accessible media. AMI believes everyone should be included, and that includes you. AMI is inclusion. Experience AMI at amiplus.ca.